Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeray from the Relevant Radio app. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeray on Relevant Radio.
How's screen usage going for you? If you have kids, how's it going for your kids? Notice any behavioral concerns, short-temperedness? My guest today is Melanie Hempe from ScreenStrong.com, and they are a real alternative to how things are going in most homes today with screens. I raise my hand, screens are distracting and a challenge, and they're something that I need constant accountability for, and so do kids. And so joining me today is Melanie Hempe. She's a founder of Screen Strong. You can find them at screenstrong.com. And we're diving into alternatives to some of the challenging experiences you're having personally, whether it be lacking motivation, moodiness, struggling with just friendships and relationships, spending too much time on the screen and not in getting things done in your own home, at work, at school. We're going to share a 7-day challenge that will help you to connect to people and get things done and connect with yourself and disconnect from screens. I hope you'll take it up. I know we're coming to the end of this Lenten season, and maybe getting rid of screens or social media has been part of what you've been working on. Melanie Hempe actually just released a new book. It's a workbook that you can use if you have kids with your kids. I had friends over the weekend and family, and they were even paging through it because there's a lot of data out there today regarding screen usage and things that will probably blow your mind when you realize how much the screens are actually blowing our own. So Melanie Hempe is here with me. Her new book, Kids Brains and Screens. It's a great book. It's available on Amazon. We'll post the link on social media. But much of what they get to are the alternatives. Now, today what I'd like to dive into, Melanie, are just some of the core values that you have at Screen Strong. And it may seem like an odd thing to focus on, but it's actually not, in that these help to reorient the alternatives there are out there to how things are going in most homes today when it comes to screen. So tell me a little bit about the core values behind Screen Strong and how you're seeing people's lives change because of them.
Yeah, great. Timmeray, thanks for having me. It's so great to be back.
It's good to have you. Let's dive in.
Okay, so the Screen Strong core values, we decided a number of years ago that we had to kind of whittle this down for people, right? Because it's this issue so big and there's so many things when you talk about screens. And so we came up with 5 things that we think are really important. So let's just start with the first one. So the first one, we put the most important one, is to build healthy families, to realize that family connections and values are stronger when parents are the influence in the home, and that, you know, their leadership should be greater than the leadership of your kids' peers. So I don't know if you can resonate with that yet. With your family may be kind of young right now, but what tends to happen in the screen world is that everything else out there becomes the expert, but yes, mom and dad, right?
Right. So, mom and dad become old fashioned, out of touch, ignorant, and they're no longer considered an expert in any subject matter because there's a subject matter for everything online, or it's just your favorite influencer and how they do things.
Right. And kids can just pick up their device 24 hours a day in their pocket if they have one. Of course, at Screen Strong, we recommend that that's not happening. But they can Google things. And so they depend on Google instead of mom and dad. And so the first core value really centers around the way that we teach parents to be that leader in their home and to look at it like a coach, right? I mean, you've heard me talk about this before on your show, that parents need to lead like a coach. They need to really not depend on their kids to, you know, run the team. So I think that kind of sums up probably the biggest problem with screens today and this detachment that's happening in our culture. And it is because, me included, you know, but all parents, me included, let me tell you, with our 4 kids, our oldest one got addicted to video games and dropped out of college. And this is how this whole organization got started. But we tend to depend on screens too much because it's so convenient But we really, in order to beat the battle here, to win the battle, we have got to rebuild our families. And, you know, it just doesn't take that much time, and it doesn't take that much work, really. I think, Timory, this is one of the things that parents kind of throw the towel in early, and they just say, oh my gosh, it's too big. I can't fight it. I can't,
yes.
There's nothing I can do, right?
All their friends are doing it. They don't want them to be behind when it comes to screens. I was just talking to a family member over the weekend, and they were saying, you know, I think it's better not to, you know, let your kid be behind with screens and to teach them how to self-regulate. And I was explaining, well, that's actually not what the brain data, yeah. the brain science says. Kids yeah. can't self-regulate. And
right.
quite frankly, you're an adult. Are you able to self-regulate your screen time as
right.
well?
Right. And you can't. And that's what Screen Strong is all about, educating parents and kids now with this new workbook on why that is true. And so we keep, like you said, you know, we just keep trying to tell parents, you know, parents keep thinking that they're going to be able to change their kids' brains. And, you know, I think parents have been trying to do that for hundreds of years. I would imagine that they've been trying to make their kids more mature than they really are. And it's not a behavior thing, really. It is a brain development thing. And I'm not trying to, you know, get us all off the hook with this. This is just science, though. And so for a teenager, for a young child, all the way up through high school, their limbic area in their brain is super developed, and that frontal cortex is not there yet. And when a parent thinks that they've got to give their kid a screen ahead of time, ahead of their natural, what their natural development would, you know, say is the best time to give a screen, then they are causing their child to really be harmed. And I certainly did that with my oldest. I had no idea. I had no intention of doing that. But this first value that is built around healthy families, this is kind of what happened in our home. We lost traction and the screen started running our family, the video game time. And, you know, then of course, with many families, it's a smartphone and all the social media time. So this core value is so important that as you're listening today and you may have conflicts in your home right now, you've got to start with the most important thing, and that is regain your leadership role in the family. And it doesn't mean that you're the mean person, you're the mean parent or the mean coach. It just means that you get a handle on it. Your child absolutely will not be able to handle toxic screens. And that goes into our second core value, which is to eliminate toxic screens. And so
and I'd just like to jump in briefly for a yeah. moment here, because you might not have kids. You might not be working with kids and you think, well, this isn't necessarily relevant to me, but I take these seriously for myself. I think we all need to hear this. I know much of your content is geared toward families, but all of this is relevant to adults as well. Adult video yeah. game usage, adult screen usage, having authority over yourself even, rather than just yeah. running away with the binging on social media, the addictive shopping, the social media use, all of that. And so thank you for joining me. That's Melanie Hempe here on Trending from ScreenStrong.com. Diving back into your second core value of eliminating toxic screens, if you could clarify what toxic screens are, because people hear that and they think, oh, you just hate all technology. But if you could explain what that is.
Right. It's not all technology. It is certain uses of technology that becomes very problematic, especially for kids. And that's video games, social media, and pornography. Those are the three areas that are the most problematic. So we label those things toxic when they're causing so many problems for kids. And, you know, I think that we're all very aware of all the studies and all the research that is continuing to be looked at in our culture through John Haidt and all the new things he's doing, and Jean Twenge and all the things that she's done in the past. The data is in, it is coming in every day, that these screen uses, these particular ones, the video games, social media, and pornography, those are the ones that are hurting our kids the most. And we have to realize that these are not school screens. These are not screens that we would use as a tool. These are things that are harming our kids. And you know what, Timory, they're not mandatory. None of these things, of course, are mandatory for any age child. You know, I think that we think that, well, it's here to stay and it's never going anywhere, so therefore we have to use it. And I remember very clearly with my oldest, before I knew what was happening, I just really trusted the tech companies. I trusted that the gaming company was never going to produce and sell something to my kid that would be harmful to him. And boy, was I wrong. But I remember as a young parent just thinking, surely they're protecting my kids. And I just want everybody listening to just wake up a minute. And I'm not going to be Debbie Downer about it, but it's just the fact. They're not caring about your kids. And it's no offense to them, And we're not going to vilify the tech companies and the gaming companies. We're just going to step back and eliminate the uses that are hurting our kids the most. We're going to reduce the risk of our kids getting in trouble, of our kids wasting time, of our kids getting all messed up and backwards with their identity and their values. You know, Timory, our values are not genetic, unfortunately. And I think a lot of parents, you know, miss
assume
this.
That. Yes.
And they assume that. Yes.
Quote, and not my kid, right? Not my kid.
Yeah, the
my
whole
kid
not
knows
my kid.
Better. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and what you just said a minute ago about, you know, how parents worry because their kids have to build willpower, right? Well, this is a this is a big myth, and it's a mystery, because the way that we build willpower, you, an adult, as well as your child, it is not by getting closer and closer to the temptation. I know that that seems like that might be the way, but medically and scientifically and all the data shows that if you want to lose weight, for example, you don't bring a dozen donuts home every day after work, right? So that's too tempting for you. And mm-hmm. the thing about temptation is that, you know, willpower has a very short shelf life. Like, it expires really quickly. So you might can resist for mm-hmm. an hour, but then after that, you're not gonna be able to resist, right? So mm-hmm. the idea that we think that we're going to teach our kids how not to use screens by giving them screens is backwards. It's mm-hmm. very backwards. Yeah. It doesn't fall in line with any other addictive substance or behavior. We don't teach our kids not to drink alcohol, or we don't teach our kids to drink alcohol responsibly by giving them more alcohol. Like, this isn't it. When you look at it that way, it makes so much more sense. But we all think that we can just give our kids phones. Okay, now how, you know, we're going to teach them how not to use it. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. But and I remember one of the people that works closely with you, Dr. Adriana Stacey, there at Screen Strong, she came on the show, I think it was last year, and she was sharing some of the data on this, because she's on the front line when it comes to research, to psychology. She's working with families who are navigating this. And she shared a stat that the research is pointing to, that even 30 minutes a day is already too much, because some people say, well, we'll just do 30 minutes of iPad time and that's it. But even with kids developing motor skills, with teenagers, and just if they spend 30 minutes a day sitting browsing social media, the damage for their psyche, there's so much behind the research indicating that the tech use for learning and the tech use for social and just enjoyment is not the way to go for kids today. And she even mentioned the difference between a distant TV where you're watching a movie versus a handheld object, and how different it is from even watching too much TV 15 years ago versus watching close up a screen where you're actively engaged and the impact it has on the brain.
Yeah, there's a very different immersion that happens with the TV versus a video game. And a video game or a social media binge, it is overstimulating the limbic area of the brain. And so what happens, even on 30 minutes a day, or people say, okay, well, maybe it's just 30 minutes, we're going to moderate it on the weekend and whatnot, you're still giving your kid a taste. It still turns that system on. And now what happens, once they get that high level dopamine, we've talked about this before, once they get that super high level of dopamine, even for 30 minutes, now that's all they want to do.
Yes.
And so you only give it to them for 30 minutes. What it does is it frustrates them. And it's just better not to have screens, the toxic use of screens. Of course, you can go watch a family movie, you watch a documentary, however you want to do it. That's fine. But that's not what we're talking about. But it's very damaging to allow this whole moderation idea. Doesn't work with everything, and screens is one thing it doesn't work with. Mm-hmm. Just like it does, you would not say to your children, hey, how about, you know, let's just watch 30 minutes of pornography every week. You know, that's better than an hour, right? Wouldn't you say? And so you think about what you're saying, and it doesn't make sense. Plus, it's going to stimulate them to the point where, like my oldest son says, there is nothing that gives you as much dopamine as a screen. And he's right. That's how they've made them now. So again, we're not going to act all scared, crazy, and clueless. What we're going to do is get educated. We're going to understand the science behind the dopamine. And with the new course material, that's what we've done. We've broken it all down for kids so they can understand it. And parents need to understand it. And then once you have a logical fact in front of you, it is very easy to parent around this. It really is. Trust me.
And the book's fantastic. I have it in front of me now. It's very interactive. The graphics are incredible. The science and data is phenomenal. We could just go through piece by piece and do a show on half of one of these pages. The data is there in support of the truth about screens. And you don't hear this discussed often enough. You guys are doing it at screenstrong.com. I know people such as Dr. Nicholas Carderis were on the front line as well, exposing the data and research on this. Let's dive through a couple more of those, I think, core values that I think are really key. And I love this next one you have of developing life skills, because doesn't that come before being able to use something that could have an addictive quality, but also developing life skills that are social as well? So share with me a little bit about this core value.
Right. So this core value made it to the top of our top five list because it is the most important thing that your kids need to be doing right now during their pre-adolescent and adolescent years. This is their job, developing core values around life skills, mastering life skills. Mastering life skills, of course, is way more important than mastering screen skills. And I just want to say about that, Timory, have you ever gotten, when you buy a new iPhone, have you ever gotten a book to tell you how to use it, a guide or directory or whatever? Of course not. They don't have instruction manuals for smartphones. And the reason why is because any four-year-old can use a smartphone, right? And so for parents out there who are wondering like I was, well, they have to use it, right? They have to learn how to use technology. No, what they need to do is learn basic life skills. The technology skills, first of all, are going to be all different in 5 years. So what they wasted all their time learning right now isn't even going to help them in 5 years. And even so, it's going to even be more intuitive. What's not intuitive is figuring out how to fix your car or do your laundry or make your bed or all the things that they have to learn to do. That has to be practiced. And those things need instructions. You have to teach your kids how to cook. You have to teach them how to mow the lawn. There's all those basic life skills. And then there's the other developmental skills that are included in this. And that is the social skills that they are not learning on their phone. And they can't learn it on a video game. And they can't learn it on their screen. And mom and dad, no matter how much you think that your kids are being social online, it is barely halfway filling their tank. It is counterfeit. It is not real social time. So the life skills and the EQ skills and the social skills are so important. And I told my boys when they were young that they could get a phone after they learned all these life skills. And I put them all up on a board and they looked at them and they said, Mom, that's going to take us 18 years to learn all those things. And I said, yeah, that's about right. And that's what happened. And they didn't get a phone all the way through high school. And we were very, very strong on that stand because the data that comes in and the research, what I've known over the years is that kids are very inept with their life skills. They need to spend more time through high school doing life skills and not wasting their time, right? Because there's a big time waste that happens when they're on a phone. You know, I didn't have a phone until I had kids, right? So I tell my kids, I'm not asking you to do anything that I haven't done.
Yeah, and the gift of having the ability to develop those social skills, but even being able to look back in hindsight of the impact of tech, the great tool that it is, but also the challenge it can bring with communication and quality time. It's interesting to hear the much older generations who still haven't maybe fully adopted technology and how they're sitting there with their eyes up, looking out into society while everyone else is looking down, and just to see what they recognize that we're missing today. Real quick, I'd like to touch on these couple other values that you have that they're at screenstrong.com, prioritizing authentic relationships and daring to be different. If you could just briefly touch for a moment on both of those. I think the authentic relationships is very legitimate, but if you could share briefly on each of these.
Yeah, so really quick, we just talked about a minute with the social relationships, but many times when you have a phone and your child is very immersed in their games and their phones and their social media, they are not paying attention to the people in their life. And I mean, that makes sense, right? That's just a very common thing. So authentic relationships, what actually we also mean by that is, time with parents. So they just need to spend more time with you. They need to spend more time with their parents. They need to make that a priority instead of all of their video games and social media. And then the dare to be different. Timory, we have got to start teaching our kids how to step out from the crowd. Every leader will tell you, if you don't know how to step out from the crowd, you're not going to be a leader. So that's what that final core value is, not to be afraid, and for parents not to be afraid of their kids. and for kids not to be afraid of their peers, and for parents not to be afraid of their peers. We have to be okay being different.
And especially as people of faith, it's so key that we're having this conversation of helping kids to dare to be different, because they've got to get their heads out of the tech use to see it's okay to dress differently in a modest way that's also really attractive, and to find your own style that you enjoy. It's okay and it's good to have a faith that you hold to and values that you uphold, and you don't necessarily have to preach it on social media if you hold to a particular worldview. I think so many of these elements are key to developing, yet kids cannot develop their authentic selves. And as you're saying, dare to be different. You know, people talk so much about the uniqueness of the trans movement today. It's a trend. It's a fad that is going. The same kids who were involved in theater and cutting and anorexia are some of the same kids who are portraying similar outcast mentalities that are being taken into areas such as the trans movement, versus truly developing skills in the different and unique human beings that we are. And so I love what you guys are doing. We're going to come back with a great resource for a 7-day challenge to connect to people and disconnect from screens, to connect into your life skills. So I hope you'll stay with me. My guest today is Melanie Hempe from ScreenStrong.com. I love her new book, Kids, Brains, and the Screens. Kids, Brains, and Screens. We're linking to it on social media as well as the episode notes. If you have a question about tech usage for my guest, Melanie Hempe, our toll-free line, sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance, is 888-914-9149.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I'm reading the latest book released by Melanie Hempe at ScreenStrong.com, Kids, Brains, and Screens. It's excellent. It's geared toward families to use with your kids. I hope you'll pick up this book. It's interactive, great graphics, there are worksheets in it. And in this, I learned about a 7-day challenge that I thought was pretty awesome. Maybe you need to make some changes for yourself with screens or for and with your kids. And this is one way to start to make it happen. And there's tons of data supporting it, even helping your kids to choose this for themselves or for you to do the same. Melanie Hempe from ScreenStrong.com is the author and founder as well of Screen Strong, and she's here to dive into what the 7-day challenge is. Can you share with us what it is and how to make it happen?
Yeah, so the 7-day challenge is what we have included in the Kids, Brains, and Screens curriculum for kids. And this book that you have is a curriculum. And so what that means is it works best in a classroom, but you can certainly do it at home, a homeschool. You can just read through the book, you know, when you're in your home after dinner every night, read a chapter. So it can certainly cross all different areas as far as groups and small groups and individuals, but it is designed for the classroom. And so this 7-day challenge was designed for the classroom to use after they go through this curriculum. At the very end, all the kids decide that they're going to take the next 7 days and they're not going to be on their video games, and they're not going to be on their social media, and they're going to put their phones away, and they're actually going to live life without their phones and social media for 7 days. And you have, I think, some quotes from one of the teachers that sent us the essays, because the teachers are typically having kids write essays and maybe give them extra credit for that, but they write essays about their experience. And so
their experience of doing the 7-day challenge,
what it was like for them, you know, how their life kind of changed for that 7 days. So our typical detox is about, you know, a month long. I mean, you know, most doctors will tell you that, yeah, you can start with 7 days, but you need at least a month for your dopamine to reset. But the cool thing about the 7-day challenge is that it's something that a family can do. It's something that your class can do. And of course, with your friends at school, when you do a 7-day challenge, the fun thing is that everybody's planning fun things to do to get together, even during the week, like in the old days when we used to get together with our friends after school. That was sort of a thing that we used to do that doesn't happen anymore. So social skills are really lacking today. But this is part of the curriculum. And again, with the book and the curriculum, you get 24 lesson plans, Timmery. So, you know, any teacher can pull this together pretty quickly. Actually, she doesn't have to do as much prep maybe as she thinks in order to teach this. But the 7-day challenge is included also in the Connect group. So when you go on screenstrong.org and you can join the Connect group, and that's just a group of, it's not social media, but it's a forum for parents to get in there and talk to each other, and you can have access to the 7-day, or you can buy the curriculum and it's in there as well. And, you know, I think it's just really important for kids to have something like this structured so they can, and even adults too. I don't know if you've ever tried to just get off your phone for a week. I know with our jobs, it's kind of hard to do that, but there are certain things that we can do with our phone that we turn it off at 5 o'clock. And then we have every evening for 5 days without any distractions on our phones. Boy, does it change your life. It really does. It's kind of like if you go on a sugar fast, you know, you feel so much better, you know? And so that's what the 7-day is. And like I said, we have a 30-day detox as well that I recommend, and that's in our parent course. I think the biggest thing about the 7-day challenge, the stories that really stand out to me, even in 7 days, talking to the kids, we have a little video on our site about this as well, but we have a gal talking about it, but they all say that they spend more time with their family. And there was this one story where the gal was telling me that, you know, her dad drives her to school every morning. That's very typical, right? But she said when she went on the 7-day challenge and took her phone away, like, you know, she didn't have her phone for 7 days. And these are all high school kids doing this, by the way, on this particular challenge that I'm talking about right now with this gal. She was in high school. She said, I can't believe what happened. She said, I actually talked to my dad. And I was like, what? Can you explain that a little bit? And she said, I realized that every morning, you know, we don't see him that much because he works a lot and he has long hours, but he does take us to school. But we're all on our phone. And every morning we're on our phone. So for that whole week, she said, I talked to my dad more in that week, just in those drives to school in the morning, I think than I had all year. Wow. And she said, Melanie, he's actually a really smart guy. Yeah, he is. And that was so cool to me that it took this challenge for her to realize that. 100% across the board, this is what we hear, along with many things. But the common thread that we hear is my kids are talking to me more. We hear that all the time. Because what are they going to do? They don't have their phone. So they're going to sit in the kitchen with you while you're cooking dinner, and they're going to talk to you more. So anyway, it's all really cool. I mean, it's amazing what happens even in 7 days. But what our goal is to have them, you know, go further than that and realize that they don't need social media. They need to realize that their life is so much better, and that all the social media and all the things are going to be there for them after they graduate and get in the world and have their own families. But they don't need all this right now. And they are so stressed. I mean, there is so much stress happening in our kids today. And I guess we sound like, you know, that we're kind of looking back at the old days, like they were so great. But in this respect, they really were.
Because the social engagement, the bike riding, the adventures, and even just seeing the differences between my generation and my parents, and to hear the fun things that my parents went and did, to think of the freedom that I had. I grew up in the mountains, and my next door neighbor and I would go hiking for hours on end without a cell phone, uncontactable. Right. And we would have a blast. The imagination, the fun, the books that I read, and the reading that was fostered, and life skills that were developed. That's something you mention in the book about this 7-day challenge. You mention having things such as being prepared to know how to tell the time because you don't have your cell phone, being prepared to read good books, to go outdoors, have the equipment you might need to go outdoors, art supplies, journaling, planning social engagements. Like, even if it's just the 7 days that you, or maybe if you have kids, will agree to doing, see how different life can be during that time, and even acknowledge, perhaps, if you don't have a bunch of social engagements, how quiet and maybe even boring it might be, and that maybe the phone's being used to fill too much of a void that you need to work on skills or people to bring into that void. And that might be making whole new friendships. That might be starting all new hobbies. I think much can be said, even if the time is in silence as well.
You learn so much about what to do with boredom. And, you know, if as a child, if we don't teach our children how to be comfortable in their own skin and how to be comfortable with boredom, we've really done them a disservice, because the rest of their life, they're going to feel like they have to fill every little minute. And we've all been guilty of that. And The second thing that I hear from parents, other than the first, which is my kids are talking to me more, is from the kids that they are reading so much more. Mm-hmm. You touched on that. You know, books were the first thing to go when screens came out, right? Mm-hmm. So an iPad is about the size of a book, and it replaced books. And when they have a break from their screens, and this is something usually they can't do by themselves. They need their parents to do it. They need their school to do it. If you have school age kids, please, please talk to them about getting this curriculum in their school. We have this curriculum in a lot of schools. This is what we do. This is absolutely the core value of Screen Strong, is to get this education out so our kids can thrive. They can talk to their families again. They can read. They can actually learn in this course, Timory, just about all the things that screens are doing and how to actually help themselves a little bit with this. I think it's very important for kids, for us to educate them. I think it's time. We're talking about this issue all the time, and it's time for us to educate our kids and give parents and kids common words and common truths around this most difficult issue in our culture.
It's a timely topic, and I think there should be nothing but excitement and optimism when it comes to how we use our screens. View them as tools. Adults use them as tools, and in certain respects and areas, they can be used as tools for kids. But the question is, what tools do they need to be for kids today? And how are they potentially a crutch for parenting today? And I'm not saying that with judgment, because I get it. I have had many people, whether it's people who have kids with special needs and you're trying to navigate things such as when autism and fixation on things is occurring. I get it. I've had those conversations, but I'll just share briefly. About a year and a half ago, I had a friend who has some children with some developmental delays, one child with autism, and the child with autism, she would use the screen to help her navigate those challenging moments when the child was fixating on something and she just needed a break. She was navigating day in and day out, parenting a child with special needs. And one day she looked at me and she said, "Timory convinced me to go screen-free." And I looked at her and I said, "Why me?" And I just laughed that, like, she just came to me for this, because it wasn't really a topic we'd ever discussed. She said, "I just need someone to encourage me to do it." And I said, "Well, do it." And I said, "Well, how do you use it?" And she said, "I use it as a parenting crutch. I know I do. I know my kids are on too many screens, but I have relied on it." And she said, "What do I do?" And I said, "Go cold turkey. Do it. You can do it." And so they were getting ready to move, and they were heading out on a road trip to move cross country. And you know what she did? She went cold turkey in the car on the way up to where they were traveling to their new home, Melanie. And I thought, wow, I wouldn't have done that, was my initial reaction. Yeah. And within the week, she ended up contacting me saying it changed her life. Her son started developing coping skills that he never developed before. She thought that she just needed the screen as a crutch. He started to cope, and the other child started engaging in independent play, so she wasn't as dependent upon anymore. And so it was neat to see, in an extreme case, for real circumstances where I get it, screens are being turned to as a real crutch to assist in those challenging moments, how transformative it was for her. And she went, I mean, full on cold turkey in what I think would have been timing that I wouldn't have even been willing to engage in. So what you guys are doing at Screen Strong, the resources you're having for parents such as she and others, I know so many parents that are extremely grateful. And I hope you'll consider checking out this workbook, considering either one of the 7-day or 30-day challenges from Screen Strong. We're linking to it on social media as well as in the episode notes. Thank you for everything you're doing, Melanie. Go check out the science. Get informed. Dive into the knowledge that is available to help make a change for yourself, or maybe if you have a family, for kids in your family. That's screenstrong.com. I'll be right back on Trending. My jaw just about dropped when I saw this. I wasn't surprised. We knew it was coming. But trending on social media right now is a TED Talk actually from a handful of years ago. And a lot of people are discussing how scholars say pedophilia is now a sexual orientation. My jaw dropped when I saw the headline, because yes, the warning's been there. It's a logical conclusion of sexuality being on a spectrum. But is there any purpose and order to sexuality? Is anyone harmed by this? We'll be right back here on Trending.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I'll mention this more later on, but I'm going to ask you to do something. Next week is Holy Week. Can you believe it? Whether you're ready or not, it's Holy Week, and one of the greatest things you can do is participate in Holy Week, in the Triduum. Holy Thursday Mass, a veneration of the cross on Friday, stations on Friday, the true fasting, allowing yourself the time to actually fast by not over-engaging yourself, letting it be a true day of mourning of the loss that occurred, but the greatness of life that occurred as well. Holy Saturday, let it be a quiet day. Let it be a quiet day of resting in the tomb, of resting with Christ, of pondering the significance. Actually, historically, from the eve on Thursday evening all the way pushing through Friday, through Holy Saturday, until you participate in that Mass of the Resurrection, whether you participate in the Easter Vigil on Saturday evening or go to Mass for the Resurrection of our Lord and the celebration of Easter on Sunday, fasting historically has been done from that Thursday evening all the way until the celebration of the Easter Mass. And so I encourage you to plan your Holy Week. Plan to go to the Triduum Masses. Plan those times of quiet and prayer. Let everything you've been sacrificing, letting go of, or doing culminate in this season of profound union with Christ by abiding with Him and being with Him during this time. What greater way than to join through the Mass, through the liturgy? So find the schedule for your parish. They're already being printed, at least online, as well as usually in the parish bulletins. I have it written out on our calendar. We're planning for it. One of the fun things I love to do, and we'll have to talk about it at the beginning of next week, is also having some of the neat foods on Holy Thursday after Mass from what used to be the Passover, also known as the Seder meal. Some of the neat foods that they had after having gone through with the great liberation of the Israelite people from Egypt, those foods that became custom for them, remembering the great celebration and remembering the significance, how the coming of Christ all the more so liberates us in Him and opens up the gates of heaven. So that's one neat tradition we have as well in the midst of the liturgical celebrations are the food elements as well. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Okay, this was one that just about made my jaw drop, not because I didn't know that it was coming or I was unfamiliar with it, but just that people have the gall to actually say it. Now, this is actually circulating on social media right now, but it's from a 2018 TEDx talk that was given by a so-called scholar by the name of Miriam Heine. The talk's titled, Pedophilia is a Natural Sexual Orientation. And if you're wondering if this is true, completely verified online. If you follow him, even Snopes verified it. And this is just a little bit of that talk.
Most of us feel discomfort when we think about pedophiles. But just like pedophiles, we are not responsible for our feelings. We do not choose them. But we are responsible for our actions. And we must make a decision. It is in our responsibility to reflect and to overcome our negative feelings about pedophiles. And to treat them with the same respect we treat other people with. We should accept that pedophiles are people who have not chosen their sexuality and who, unlike most of us, will never be able to live it out freely if they want to lead an upright life. We should accept that pedophilia is a sexual preference.
Yes. From an emotional point of view, I can kind of understand that you would want to eliminate these people from society. However, it doesn't make sense. And that's because we're talking about biology. We're talking about a sexual orientation, something that we simply cannot change. And on top of that, every day, new people are born with the same difficulty. So it's not practical to eliminate these people from society. They haven't done anything wrong.
Where do I start here? That's from a TEDx talk where scholars are making the case that pedophilia is now a sexual orientation. Maybe you heard this before. It's recirculating on the internet right now. It's from a TEDx talk in 2018. And this is the logical conclusion of the LGBTQ ideology that gender, sexuality, all of that from orientation is on a spectrum. And everyone has a spectrum. But let me be really clear about something that's mentioned here. One of these so-called scholars tries to claim that biology is an orientation and that basically people are born with pedophilia. That's simply not true. It's simply not true. And even the claim that people no longer are trying to make that someone is, quote, born gay, it's a myth. All of the secular research says otherwise. It's been completely disproven. And the fact that people try to claim that this is a biological fact of orientation isn't true. When someone tries to say that a person can't control both their feelings and their actions, or where someone tries to say, well, you can't control your feelings, but you can control your actions, actually, we have a responsibility to properly form and shape ourselves. Yes, if you have a feeling or a thought, you're not culpable for that feeling or thought that occurs just out of the blue. But if you indulge in those thoughts that are rightly disordered, then that is where the sin enters in. Or if you not only indulge in the thoughts, but engage in the action. I am tired of hearing the argument that sexuality and orientation, all of that is on a spectrum. The same argument is you do you. Or someone says they can't help their feelings. Love is love. Or you shouldn't try to change, help, or judge someone. We know that God created us male and female. Basic biology. But we also know that God created us male and female with the ability for complementarity between the sexes. And that from that can occur both the pleasure and joy of intimacy, but also the gift of new human life. Now, does that mean that every single person will have children? No. Does that mean that every single person will have sexual encounters? No. But what it does mean is that this is a part of the human being that must be properly ordered because it was created and intended for a proper purpose. What's sad is that what's not being mentioned when you talk about trying to argue, as the scholars are saying for pedophilia, is that children are the ones who are impacted by this. The exploitation of children. Children can't properly consent. And all of this comes from faulty psychology, a Freudian mindset that sexuality is behind everything. Who on earth funds research such as this? Who does research such as this? And it's easy to say, well, it's not worth engaging or even repeating. I actually disagree. When a scholar comes out and tries to defend the LGBTQ movement, when they try to defend pedophilia as a sexual orientation, they are following the LGBTQ ideology through its full thought pattern to its natural end, with everything from pedophilia to bestiality, all of it, I'm not going to dive into. But what we're talking about are children who are being exploited, sexualized, and who can't even consent. The truth is, and I said this earlier, God created us male and female with a great gift for sexual complementarity, for pleasure and procreation. The two go hand in hand. The Catholic Church teaches that every intimate act is meant to be between a husband and wife for the good of the spouses, unitively, and second, for procreation, that we're open to new human life. People will say, well, marriage is just a social construct. Well, then tell me why every society in every age in every culture and all people always have something that looks just like man-woman marriage. It's the blueprint for the human person. It's naturally ordered and understood. Man and woman make child. Man and woman enter into a lifelong committed marriage to provide stability for one another, along with stability to a child who has a natural born right to their mother and father. Even in international law, it's still upheld that a child has a natural born right to their biological mother and father. And people argue, well, this doesn't really have to do with the LGBTQ movement, because gay and trans identifying individuals don't impact you or children. That's not true. One, it's scandalous because it takes sexuality out of its proper order. Two, it sexualizes kids because it's putting a sexual identity on the human person and reducing a person to that identity. And third, please tell me when I've spent time in the hospital with my newborn or with other people's children, why the NICUs are full of couples who are identifying as same sex, who have commissioned babies, designer babies, because they can't biologically have children because they're in homosexual relationships. The bottom line is that it does impact all of us. And this argument from scholars in favor of pedophilia as part of the sexual spectrum and orientation is the logical next step in the ideology of the LGBTQ movement. So yes, we should engage these arguments. Because these disordered ideologies surrounding the human person, human flourishment, human happiness, human identity, leaves wounds. It goes after the vulnerable. It goes after children. And it leaves them in danger of exploitation. And we have the responsibility to tell the truth. We have the responsibility to speak of the order and joy that God directs us toward, the hope that is in store for all human beings, even if you struggle with a disordered attraction outside of the view and the vision and design of the human person and the blueprint intended for our bodies. And it opens the door to selfless love through self-denial that is not easy. But we find the greatest joy as human beings through the excellence of our sacrificial love. And so I hope that, although it's an uncomfortable topic, that we see the conclusion, have the tough conversations surrounding the LGBTQ ideology and the fact that scholars are pushing for pedophilia as part of the next part of the spectrum. Again, this is just a TEDx talk. Just a TEDx talk. People love TEDx talks from 2018 that's recirculating over the last couple of weeks. But it's an argument that has been made and will continue to be made. But it helps show the disorientation and order, lack of order, that can come when we take things out of their proper context. You're listening to Trending with Timmery here on Relevant Radio. Okay, so it's officially the spring season. We're a few days into spring with it kicking off this year, March 19th. And something I'm thinking about that has been an ongoing goal and hope for me and maybe for you too is to start a garden. Now, I started a herb garden, oh goodness, about 10 years ago, and it's still kicking. I have it in this nice silver basin. I have rosemary and thyme and a lot of those basic herbs that you cook with, or I cook with a lot, and I can eat them fresh and throw them in my dishes. I love it. It makes the food pop. That's a really easy, fun place to start if you've never started there. But maybe you want to continue to take some new steps this year. I know I am. I shared with you that we launched off our chickens this weekend. More stories on that. I actually have a hilarious story. It was a family, a neighborhood ordeal this weekend. But here's the deal. Having a garden is something that so many people want to do, but I think are afraid of. And then other people who have these phenomenal gardens that, oh my goodness, are huge. I don't even know how they do it. As I'm sitting here like still just managing my herb garden from 10 years ago that is thankfully still alive. Well, we tried to kick off having a garden about 2-3 years ago when we were living in the Midwest. And if you know this, in the Midwest, you've got to wait to plant till around Mother's Day because the ground has to be defrosted. You don't want to be getting the frozen things frozen and freezing in the ground. So Mother's Day is usually that good point, that safe point. You've got to know things that grow well in your region. These are all things we're researching, making sure things that are protected from the critters, but starting small. We had a huge flop. We planted our garden, and then within a month, we had a really, really late growth of spring, and my garden was completely shaded, and I had torn up the entire big chunk of my garden right in front of one of my big windows. So it's a learning experience. It's a lot of fun. It's trial and error, but I'd love to hear from you if you're starting a garden in this season or have tips for doing so. It's a fun thing to do to get outside and unplug and enjoy the creation that God's given us. Up next is a family rosary across America. This is Timmery from Trending with Timmery. Are you needing to make some changes with how you spend your money? My guests Thursday are from walletwin.com. Also, why are women ditching the pill while Amazon and retail stores begin selling harmful over-the-counter birth control? Do you know what the three types of friendship are? What type of friend do you want to be? Join me daily, 6 p.m. Central, on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.